The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The EFL begins this weekend, so let's make some wild predictions and then ignore them for the rest of time. Is the Championship any good this year? Do the parachutes given to Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield United have added jetpacks to get them back to the promised land? What about some classic top-flight clubs? QPR, Nottingham Forest, could they make it up? There's Neil Warnock and his bum bag in Middlesbrough, and Chile's finest, Ben Brereton-Diaz in Blackburn, and another crisis at Derby County. League One has some big hitters, Sunderland, Ipswich, Charlton, Sheffield Wednesday, and Cambridge United. While in League Two, welcome to Sutton United, and welcome back to Hartlepool. Believable, Jeff. Also, we'll do some Danny Ings, an out-of-date Harry Kane update, a stunning Manchester United menu, all on today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning. Hello.
Hello, Max.
You missed one podcast. People asked if you had intentionally stayed away to push for a move elsewhere. What can you say about this? You were fined for not appearing on yesterday's pod.
I am committed to Football Weekly until such time as I am no longer committed to Football Weekly.
Ben Fisher, hello. Joel says, if Ben had to choose one EFL car park to have one of his grand adventures, which would it be?
What a place to start. Do you want that now or do you want that later in the pod?
Oh, I see. You choose when to answer your questions. We've got a tricky pod when I ask you a question. You go, do you want me to answer that one? I'll tell you what, why don't we save it, Ben? Because it's bound to be a zinger.
Exactly.
And that'll keep people listening right to the end. Jonathan Faduba, how are you, mate?
Very well, thank you.
Looks like you're sort of hiding under a table. What is, what's...
Yeah, it's got sort of a laptop / phone setup that's kind of going on here. It's a bit... It's all very basic, but looks kind of cool.
Yeah, but it also looks a bit like you're hiding, which is quite a fun way to do a podcast, I guess, isn't it? Question from Dave to begin with, and a serious question, which is, what is the financial state of the clubs in the EFL? I appreciate that's quite a broad question because all the clubs are different. We've been told lots of clubs wouldn't survive COVID without masses of aid. Has aid been given? Are clubs on the edge? Or was it not all as bad as feared? Ben, do you know the answer to that question?
Yeah, obviously quite complex. I would say that EFL, in fairness, in the end, kind of fought their corner quite hard and got quite a lot of help, even if it was not forthcoming from certain places higher up, I suppose, initially during the pandemic. Ended up with a kind of £250 million package and £200 million of that, you know, clubs could kind of dip into as a loan and kind of apply and get help that way. There was various kind of short-term relief packages that the EFL sort of brought forward, which helped as well. And here we are. Yeah, it was quite doom and gloom, wasn't it? And lower down, we should say, in non-league as well. But as far as I'm aware, I think everybody, you know, is fine. And I think the big thing now is the return of fans. I think if that was delayed any longer, that would create problems. And obviously, hopefully everything goes smoothly with that. But I think that is a big and welcome relief as well.
I mean, obviously, it depends on your ownership, right? There are examples, and we'll get to them, of clubs that have been, terribly managed at that level that are having real problems.
Yeah, and I think the big problem is, ultimately, still clubs are just so reliant on owner funding, you know, so reliant on one bloke basically pumping in millions of pounds. Wages to turnover is frightening, especially in the Championship. Reading are kind of the main culprits of that at the moment. But not just them, you know, most clubs well over 100% in that bracket. And yeah, that something needs to change in terms of that parachute payment disparity, really, because as we're probably going to talk about in a minute, the clubs that come down are so much better off than those who finished 4th, 5th and 6th last season.
Jonathan, is the Championship good? I mean, I quite enjoy watching some Championship games. I don't watch millions of them, but I'm told by people who watch them all the time that it is, you know, lots of people sort of try and push this. It's better than the Premier League. It's more competitive. I mean, that's probably true. But like, is it good? And this season, is it good? Because I heard somebody, and I forget who, just saying, actually, if you look at the teams this year, it's not a kind of grippingly exciting Championship.
Yeah, I think the Championship is good. It's a high level of quality. People always rate it in terms of, you know, if you look across Europe, it's always ranked as, well, arguably the best second tier league. And even maybe in terms of things like attendances, you know, one of the best top leagues, including, you know, top leagues around Europe. So it's always like very popular. I think it's quite unpredictable. So from a fan's point of view, the excitement's there. Quality, yeah, I think you're probably right. I think there may be a slight dip just because of the, you know, the nature of it. If you look at the expenditure this summer, COVID has clearly hit finances, and that's had a knock-on effect on the ability to attract players, really. But you still get high level of players. I mean, if you look at, you know, for a good example, although he's no longer there at the moment, but Birmingham City last season had Alan Halilovic, who was a player who was widely renowned, been at AC Milan, places like that. So you do get a sort of caliber of top players who can come to that league, but you also have that bubbling of sort of young players who come up through the leagues, and so you have that mixture of the two, which I think makes it really fascinating. And as I said, the unpredictability of it is what kind of adds to that excitement. And as Ben just mentioned there, it's so good to have fans back. I think that adds so much, doesn't it? And that's gonna make it more compelling. And yeah, I think it's a really good league. I like it.
I am a big fan of the Championship, but I'm not sure it's as competitive now as it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago. Two of the teams that went up last season went straight back down, and but for Bournemouth making a complete dog's breakfast of the playoffs, you could have easily had the three teams who went down going straight back up. Instead, Bournemouth missed out, and Brentford went up, and you know, their shrewd model of recruitment and financial sort of their shrewd model of recruitment and the good manner in which they, you know, buy cheap, sell, buy low, sell high, pay dividends for them. And I have a feeling because of COVID, transfer activity hasn't been as busy as you might expect usually. I think you will have three or four standout teams near the top of the league, and then 20 teams beneath them who are 16 or 17 teams beneath them who are well able to beat each other. But I think it'll be an interesting season, and I'm not sure it will be as competitive as usual. But there are a few dark horses who might push for, if not automatic promotion, certainly the playoffs.
Let's talk about those teams that came down then. I think that the managerial appointments, Ben, are quite interesting, aren't they? Because Valerian Ismail did so well at Barnsley, and he's at West Brom. Jokanović has, you know, got real experience of this at Sheffield United. And then Marco Silva at Fulham, who I still don't know if he's good or not.
Yeah, he built that reputation on that team at Hull, really, didn't he? And then from there, everyone liked the kind of suaveness, the really good English as well, I think, which helped him at that time. And yeah,
But didn't they go down? I mean, they did go down, though, Hull, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. And but they went on a good run, didn't they? And I think that was kind of what fostered a bit of loving around him. I do think that's a decent appointment, to be fair. I think Jokanović is quite comfortably the pick of the bunch. The teams that he had, his Watford and Fulham team in this division, were brilliant to watch. Great teams, made it look quite easy. Quite an impressive character. Same can be said for Ismail. I think it will be interesting how he gets a West Brom team, the bulk of which is kind of the same West Brom team we saw last season, and incorporates that into his style, which he, you know, did so well at Barnsley. But I think Jokanović is a real good get for Sheffield United. And I do ultimately think, maybe a bit like what Barry was saying a minute ago, I do think those three teams that have come down, it's hard to see those not being in the mix for automatic promotion. So in that sense, I suppose it could be a bit predictable. But at the same time, I think those teams, the teams coming down now, they keep hold of so many of their players. I don't know if the fire sale of yesteryear is kind of just made up in my head, but we saw it last season as well. Those teams, they just keep hold of so many. They lose one or two tops, really. Bournemouth will probably lose, for example, Dan Juma this year, but last year kept most of that team. Okay, it didn't work, but for Norwich and Watford, it did. And it's not level, really, in that sense. The teams in the middle of the Championship just don't have that same resource.
I don't know how much of Barnsley you watched last season, Jonathan, but by all accounts that, you know, they like to get it forward quickly. Now, Ismail's got quite an interesting approach, you know, making sort of triple substitutions at half-time. And I don't know if he'll do the same at West Brom. He's brought Alex Mowat in, who's who is a very good footballer.
Yeah, but I mean, the Barnsley team he had were, you know, defied all expectations, really, and were incredible in their run. Narrowly sort of missed out maybe on getting promoted, but I don't think that was the aim before the season started, and Ishmael's obviously attracted West Brom in that sense. It may suit kind of West Brom managers in past years, kind of that's that blueprint of style, kind of quite a very direct. I'm not sure if he maybe has the players maybe that he might need. I think there'll still be more signings potentially. And I think this is one thing that when you're predicting the league at the moment, I think a major factor is going to be, and I think this applies to all the leagues at the moment, I think there'll be a lot of loans coming from the Premier League. So I think they'll try and, you know, they'll try and sort of get players off their books potentially as the weeks go along. So I still think there's a lot of activity to happen before we could really properly maybe assess some of these teams. But I think, yeah, Ishmael kind of fits that blueprint that that West Brom, you know, maybe had with more direct managers in the past. So I guess the challenge is there'll be much higher expectations now than there was at Barnsley. So can he kind of match that? And looking at the signings so far, I mean, they've got one or two decent ones, but I still think they maybe might need one or two more.
You say, Ben, that Rian Brewster can shine unburdened in the Championship for Sheffield United. So, a very different player to Mitrovic, but perhaps in that Cameron Jerome void, those strikers that can't hit a barn door in the Premier League, but get that extra half yard of space in the Championship and score a load.
Yeah, and we have Cameron Jerome back in the Championship now.
Stop it!
With Luton, yeah, he did well at MK Dons in League One, and he's got to move to Luton, who brought in a few strikers actually. But yeah, I think Brewster. Let's remember, he did really well on loan at Swansea, and I think you know the move to Sheffield United, you know, is big money, probably big expectation. Still very young, I think he'll do really well in the Championship. I do think it could be a bit of a slow burner for Sheffield United, just because I think Jokanović, from my memory, seems to take a while to get up to speed in terms of his teams. But then once they get going, they're pretty hard to stop. And they've kept the core of the team that was promoted under Chris Wilder a couple of years ago. And a bit like West Brom, I think I was told yesterday that I think West Brom might even now keep Sam Johnston, the goalkeeper. So you're looking at these teams and the, you know, Fulham have added Harry Wilson, who's just outstanding in the Championship. Really good player, I think. And I think perhaps still more to come in the Premier League, actually, for him, if he can just develop a little more. And those teams, I think, will be really hard to stop.
Are you saying, Ben, that Sheffield United might be a slow burner or Rian Brewster will be a slow burner? Because I would say about Brewster, if he burns any more slowly, he's in grave danger of fizzling out. It'd be like a firework, you know, don't go back to him. And if you do, he'll suddenly explode into life.
No, I think Sheffield United might slow, burn slowly, sorry. But yeah, no, I think Brewster will do well. And Billy Sharp as well. And, you know, lots of these players in the Championship, I think, can perform.
Sure. And I guess after you've had a year in the Premier League, you're probably slightly finer-tuned specimen, aren't you? Now, I don't know a lot about Tony Khan, and I don't follow him on social media, but producer Sammy is Sammy James, who hosts the Fulhamish podcast, and he tweeted yesterday, "I've gone past the point of really caring. I'll never understand how Tony Khan has enough time to do all this and be a director of football," which is in response to Tony Khan sending a tweet, which doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but says, "I booked the cards for all our shows, Dynamite and now Rampage. I also booked the cards for Elevation Dark. Yes, I'm always in the chair during Dynamite, but during Dark, I'm sometimes backstage producing Dynamite promos. I've always edited taped Dynamites, but will edit Darks now too." So he's a sort of music mogul and a director of football. Sort of wonder if can you do that in the Championship, but you can't do that in the Premier League? At what stage do you know?
It sounds like cryptocurrency to me.
It does, doesn't it? But anyway, you kind of... It's good to have hobbies, right? But you just sort of want your director of football to be directing the football, is my guess, isn't it? What do you make, Jonathan, of Scott Parker's move from Fulham to Bournemouth?
I found it quite strange, to be honest, fairly bizarre, because just the nature of how it went, Parker was sort of widely praised. There was the idea that maybe even Spurs were looking at him, it kind of seemed like he was leaving because he had this big job behind the scenes and, you know, that he was going to go on somewhere that was too good to sort of be true. And then kind of ended up in the Championship a team who's going to be a rival for promotion. So, I mean, you know, the move itself, it's difficult to, you know, don't know the behind the scenes of it. But yeah, I kind of thought maybe he would stay in the Premier League potentially and maybe go to a team there somewhere, maybe Palace or something like that. So I think from Bournemouth's point of view, it's quite a good sign. But then again, you know, didn't do too badly. So obviously getting in the playoffs. So I think he can do quite well there. But I did have to say I didn't really see it coming. I thought it was a kind of a, could almost say a sideways type move.
Barry, Neil Warnock at sort of the other end of the age scale of managers at 72. Did you see the footage of him handing signed photos of himself that he'd pre-prepared, taking out of a bum bag and giving to adoring fans at Middlesbrough's training ground?
I did see that. It's quite a good sort of time-saving idea. You should probably add people were asking him for his autograph. He wasn't just walking around handing out signed photos of himself to complete strangers, because that would be slightly weird. I think Middlesbrough are being tipped as potential apple cart upsetters, and I suspect that's almost entirely down to the fact, I mean, I appreciate they are a pretty big club by Championship standards, but it seems to be entirely down to the Warnock factor that, you know, he has got so many teams promoted from the Championship that any team he's associated will automatically be mentioned in the conversation. I'm a fan of Warnock. He seems to polarized opinion, but I like him. I have a lot of time.
I like him more now. I know he just walks around with a bum bag with signed photos of himself. This is a tremendous step in the right direction, I think. When I'm 72, I'm absolutely going to be doing that.
He is one of only two men I know who actually own a bum bag, the other being urbane, sophisticated commentator and broadcaster Sam Matterface.
Interesting. I have no further questions. I'll sit down and let the defence come up now. Ben, can you run us through a few other sort of runners and riders? You know, Cardiff under Mick McCarthy, Nottingham Forest. I was there for EFL launch day on Tuesday. I don't think I launched the EFL. I think it already existed. Some people saying Luton Town as well.
Yeah, I quite fancy Cardiff, actually, in Kiefer Moore. Striker who impressed in the summer for Wales as well in Euros. I think they've got he scored 20 goals last season. First player to do that for Cardiff since late Peter Whittingham. They've added James Collins from Luton, who should kind of help him chip in with a few more goals, or take the burden off of him, I should say. And I think really interesting one, Ryan Giles, who they've got in on loan from Wolves, sort of got a great left foot. He's had a couple of good loans in the Championship last season. And with his crossing, Kiefer Moore, it just seems a really good, and Collins, it seems a really good sort of cocktail there. And we saw it a bit last season with McCarthy, that he got them on that ridiculous run when he first went in. And then once he signed the contract, things did tail off a bit. But I think they're strong. I think they'll be hard to beat. Sean Morrison is good as any defender in that division. I just think, yeah, I think there'll be a handful for teams. I fancy them. I think QPR could be interesting. They've struggled in kind of recent seasons, but they finished well last year. And they're building quite nicely. They've got some bright players, some creative players. And again, in Charlie Austin, a great goal scorer, a clinical finisher. They've signed a few of the players they had in on loan. Stephanie Hansen, who they had from Fulham. Again, really good player in that league. And if they can tighten up at the back a bit, I think they could be in the playoff shout for sure.
Jonathan, anyone else you want to throw into the mix?
I like Middlesbrough. Neil Warnock with his equivalent to Werther's Originals, handing them out his signed autographs. I think it's brilliant. I think the managers with kind of proven experience in that sense, Mick McCarthy, Neil Warnock, they're the kind of managers that I look towards and think will do well. So I think Cardiff is also a good shout. Something about Middlesbrough just appeals to me. They've got, obviously, I know it's maybe a minor factor, but they have the largest stadium in the Championship. So attendance-wise, that's always a boost. I think there's statistics to show that teams with, you know, better attendances can often perform better in promotion seasons. So that's just one interesting thing to consider. I mean, Fulham, I'm not quite sure in terms of Marco Silva, the jury's kind of out of him, in my opinion. Jukanovic, Sheffield United, I think he'll figure things out. I think Jukanovic is a very smart manager. So they're the three that I'm kind of maybe looking at, maybe Middlesbrough, Cardiff and Sheffield United potentially. Fulham, I just want to say as well, they got a young player called Fabio Carvalho, an 18-year-old who I'd say keep an eye on. He's an interesting young sort of creative midfielder who might get minutes this season and could be one to kind of watch.
Luton Town, who we mentioned earlier, they strike me as a potentially interesting team. Would either you give either of them a chance of getting into, say, the playoffs, or indeed Nottingham Forest under Chris Hughton and Stoke under Michael O'Neill, who I think more was expected of him than he's delivered so far?
Yeah, definitely. I fancied Stoke last season and they failed pretty miserably. I think this season you'd expect them to be in amongst it. I wouldn't surprise me if they were in sort of the automatic contention. I think Luton have been building really steadily, really impressively actually, Barry. Yeah, and they've brought in they tend to recruit from in the Football League. You're on League One, League Two. They picked up Carlos Mendes Gomez, who did really well for Morecambe. Cameron Jerome, who we mentioned, and they've got Admiral Musque and Fred Onyedimma, who were at Wickham last season. I think they're interesting under Nathan Jones, and his record his record before with them taking them out of League Two and since going back there, having left or been sacked by Stoke, second to none, amazing. Have they got playoffs in them? I think possibly. I would probably say Millwall are perhaps a better sort of dark horse if we're sort of talking those terms. I think Gary Rowett, again, another manager who... I mean, Birmingham's decision to get rid of him all those years ago just looks crazy, doesn't it? Really impressive manager. And I think they are sturdy, but they've got that little bit of star quality as well. People like Jed Wallace. And they've got Benik Afobe in on loan, who, if that pays off, could be a great signing.
Benik Afobe, one of the footballers who you have to use both names. You know, it's very much in the Harry Arter, Ben Mee category. You can't just say a phobie.
I know it was interesting, actually, that Nigel Pearson at Bristol City seems to be trying to reassemble the Leicester team he handed over to Claudio Ranieri to win the Premier League with. He's got Andy King and Matty James in there, neither of whom I was aware still played football.
And Danny Simpson.
Oh, has he, yeah?
Mark Albrighton will be there any minute now, won't he? Good news for Coventry, they're back at the Rico. And finally, Ben, Derby County, I mean, what is happening there?
Yeah, not a great look for Derby at the moment. Fed said they're in a spot of bother. Rooney was hopeful of bringing in, basically, so that they're down to, not bare bones, but they're not where they should be squad-wise. As it stands, they don't have a recognised or senior centre-half, you know, sort of hours or, you know, a couple of days away from, obviously, the season opener at home to Huddersfield. They've had 9 players in on trial, out of contract players. They're hoping to get 4 of those in. They've been permitted by the EFL, given they're under a transfer embargo, to bring 4 in. But there are strict conditions with that. They can only be offered 1-year contracts if they're trying to sign a player permanently. And perhaps more of a sticking point is the wages. I believe it's around £5,000 a week is the threshold for that. And for some of those players they've had in on trial, Ravel Morrison and... Let's face it, basically, people who've been on big money in the last couple of years, I think those deals are probably quite hard to get done. The owner, Mel Morris, met supporters on Wednesday. Don't think it was a hugely encouraging meeting from the noises from that. Talk of takeover has gone quiet, which is perhaps almost encouraging given how public the last couple have been and how they collapsed quite miserably, spectacularly. But yeah, Rooney is... set up to fail. He said at the end of last season, you know, they can't afford any more mess-ups. And here we are. They're in a worse situation, I think, than when they finished the season in May. And let's remember, they were lucky to stay up after that ridiculous draw against Sheffield Wednesday on the final day.
And Rooney has also injured his own, arguably his best midfielder, put him out for 3 months with a bad tackle on the training ground.
Yeah, I think it was a bit more of a coming together. But yeah, it's it just tops it off, doesn't it? You just couldn't make it up at the moment. And I think, you know, when that's not the end of it. I think given they're going to start the season on this footing, it just looks to me, it looks like it's going to end in tears. I mean, it's hard to see them staying up from here. Let's face it, I think they've got a really tough job. They have got some good players in there. They've made Tom Lawrence captain. Christian Bielik is still a few months away, I think, from returning. They have got some players, but they're just so thin. And defensively, they've got problems because they're going to play probably Craig Forsyth, a left-back at centre-half. They've got a teenager in from the 23s, who, as it stands, will probably start on Saturday. It just doesn't look good.
How do you know it was a coming together, Ben? You don't know? You might have just got in. It might have been a two-footed lunge.
I was told it was a coming together.
Ah. You can't believe everything, Ben. You've got to do some investigative journalism.
I say, no. Just one quick thing as well. I was going to say, Barnsley, interestingly, have signed Michy Batshuayi's brother. So that's good fun, isn't it?
What's he called?
Aaron Leia Iseka from Toulouse.
Ah, okay. Well, good luck to him. And that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll do League One and League Two. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We've got a live show, Barry, on the 12th of August, which is a week today. I'll start doing hourly scheduled tweets until...
Oh, no.
Well, we normally get, you know, by the time I finish that, there's about 2,500. They're the Football Weekly. If you've never paid for a Zoom live show, then we don't treat you as one of the inner sanctum. And when you're in the inner sanctum, Barry, you find out more about us.
That's for sure.
Not necessarily what...
arguably stuff you wouldn't want to know. And you get a halftime spectacular that isn't shared with anyone else.
Absolutely, you do. Me, Barry, Wilson, Philippe. If you want tickets, go to theguardian.com/guardianlive. League One. Jonathan Faduba, is League One the most exciting division in the EFL this year? That's what producer Joel boldly stated in the script this morning.
From the point of view of just the sheer number of sort of fallen giants type sort of thing, clubs that have fallen on their sword and struggle to get out of the division, you could argue yes, I suppose. I mean, you've got FA Cup winners in there. You've got teams like Sunderland who, you know, everybody's seen the documentary or whatever. Everyone knows the size of the club, the appeal of it. I think that, you know, the North East, they took out the two biggest stadiums, haven't they, in the Championship and League One, which is an interesting boon. Ipswich, you know, Sheffield Wednesday. So, yeah, there's just a huge amount of clubs that are kind of shouldn't really be there to a certain extent. So I think from that point of view, it's an exciting league. It's difficult to get out of. Then you've got teams like, well, I would have said MK Dons at the time, but, you know, they had a manager leave now, so that they're in a bit of a state of flux. But even sides who've come up from League Two, like Bolton, you know, I think Bolton, for example, they're still a big club, and I think some of their recruitment has been fairly interesting. So, you know, there's one or two sides that you could look at and say they could even still give others a bloody nose. So, yeah, I think it'll be an exciting league, and mainly in the sense of the promotion battle. Then kind of the further down you go, you get kind of a bit more, well, Max, you know, teams like Cambridge, you know, who you'll have something to say about, I'm sure, and others. So I think the top end of it is very sort of top heavy, and then the lower down you get a few teams who can maybe make some upsets. But it's going to be a very competitive season, that's for sure.
Yeah, it says here, Ben, Ipswich have recruited very well this summer. Macaulay Barnes, Scott Fraser, and George Edmondson. I could say that with feeling if I knew who the hell any of them were. And Barry, raise your hand if you're in the same boat as me. Thank you very much. They've got new owners as well, Ipswich. So are they, and a good manager as well.
Yes, it is a new era, Ipswich. It does feel like a bit of a football manager spree this summer there. They've gone to town, I think, 10 new faces. As you say, yeah, Macaulay Bond, one of the strikers they brought in. They've got Connor Chaplin, who did really well for Barnsley, let's remember, you know, in the Championship last season. So Joe Piggott as well from AFC Wimbledon, who Championship clubs again were after, and Ipswich have muscled their way in and beaten those teams to him. So certainly lots of lure about what's going on there. Paul Cook, as you say, good manager. And I think the thing with them is it's just now, will it come together? They kind of did it before. They brought in a lot of players when Hurst went in, and I don't know, and you kind of, they had to make the step up from the lower league. And this time it's kind of similar, although they're probably, the players they're bringing in are probably better pedigree. But it's just, will it come together? If it does, there's no way, there's no doubt about it, they should win the league, I think. It's a great squad. It's just you know, bringing the players in and actually doing it is another thing, isn't it?
Word on Sunderland, Barry, and your 24-year-old billionaire owner?
Yeah, I'm slightly disappointed that he hasn't splurged as much cash as I would expect a 24-year-old billionaire owner. I think, is this now their fourth or fifth season in League One? They really need to get out of it. I have no idea what sort of state they're in, to be honest, but I expect they will probably be there or thereabouts.
Jonathan, the Charlton Athletic, we were talking about Tony Khan editing rap music. The Charlton owner has written a rock song, has he?
Yeah, there's a disgruntled Charlton fan friend of mine who is a former season ticket holder. He sent me this. Apparently the club's owner has created his own rock song. I think it's a fight song. He's dubbed it a fight song, and he's going to perform it, I think, at halftime of the opening game of the season. My friend, who was very despondent about this, sort of just had this vision in his mind of them being sort of 4-0 down at home to Accrington, and the chairman comes on to perform his fight song with his guitar. So yeah, painted a very interesting image in my mind. It's quite funny, but I think Sandegaard, if that's his name, if I pronounced it correctly, he's got like a part-time gig as kind of a rock star type thing, so it's something that's very much one of his passions, and he said that he's created this song to kind of rejuvenate Charlton Athletics. So Barry, I don't know if you have a fight song, if you've got any particular...
I certainly don't, but musicians playing at halftime during football matches is never a good idea. I think there was some band, some heavy metal band, I can't remember who, I think they played halftime during a Sheffield Wednesday game years ago and got booed off. And I think the lead singer was absolutely traumatised. But I would need to get on Google to figure out who that is.
Thomas Sandegaard, the owner, I've got some quotes from him. The new song is called Addicts to Victory. As you said, he hopes it'll become the new fight song and, quote, pump us up on match days. This is Charlton's fight song, he explained. It started off as one of many songs that our band have been putting together. It occurred to me we could write the lyrics to make it special to Charlton. I don't know what rhymes with Mendonca, but, you know, we used to have Clive Mendonca. Wouldn't it be great if we had Leander Dendonca? But we don't. Pump us up, Charlton.
On a slightly more serious Charlton-related note, they do have Nigel Adkins in charge, who made quite a name for himself during the first lockdown, doing his early morning motivational videos where he'd be out for a walk or eating his healthy breakfast of fruit salad and Greek yogurt. But he is a good manager, I mean, and seems an absolutely terrific bloke with a very healthy tan. He just looks so healthy. Can we expect much from Charlton and Mr. Adkins?
Yeah, I think Charlton will go well. Adkins did a good job when he went in. And as you say, I think the most positive man, maybe on the planet, but certainly in football. He, I remember him saying a few years ago, wasn't it? He said the biggest room in the house is the room for improvement. And I think he's got a few more where that came from. So there's a clip of him as well reading out the Man in the Glass poem when he was at Southampton, which people should definitely dig out. But he is a good manager. And I think, you know, let's face it, in League One, yeah, good get for Charlton. And they've got Jadon Stockley now back on a permanent deal, which should guarantee goals as well.
What about Wickham? They went down, didn't they? They almost stayed up. It was a great, you know, they had a great go in the Championship. I think they've still got Akinfenwa. And they've got Sam Vokes in as well, which is a good signing. If they lost Uche Piazza, I think, to Middlesbrough. Who started at Cambridge, a very good centre forward, physical player, much like Wickham. Can you see them or any other sides, Ben, that went down from the Championship?
Yeah, I think Vokes is very Wickham, and I mean that in a good sense. I think Gareth Ainsworth will know how to get the best out of him. I think, again, quite a coup for the club to get somebody like him in. They got Sully Kaikai as well, who at one point was kind of seen as the next Zaha at Palace, albeit quite a few moons ago now. And they've kept quite a core of the team. David Stockdale in goal, good keeper. I think they'll go well. I think Wigan will be interesting to look out for. I know you said about teams coming down. Rotherham will be strong as well, I think, under Paul Warne. But yeah, I think Wigan, who are kind of splashing a bit of cash, Charlie White, they've brought in from Sunderland, I was told this week, is on around about £8,000 a week. So, you know, it's fair to say they're spending some money under the new ownership. But he's in a bit of a lose-lose, isn't he? Because he scored, I think, 31 goals last year. I think he'll do well to top that. And if he scores, I don't know, 10, 15, it will be seen as probably a bit of failure. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. And I know Jonathan mentioned Accrington earlier. I think they just seem to get better every season under John Coleman. Finished mid-table last year. I think they could, at one point, looked like they could get playoffs, and I wouldn't rule it out. They've kept the front two, Colby Bishop and Dion Chiles. They look good.
On the subject of highly paid strikers, Max, I see that your beloved Cambridge United have lost theirs to a non-league side, and he is apparently being paid an astronomical amount of money.
Yeah, we lost Paul Mullin, so he scored... I mean, he scored so many, they named a stand after him after one season. I think only temporarily, but he got the League Two record. He got Cambridge United's record, 34 or 35 goals last season. And yeah, he's gone to Wrexham because he's gone to Hollywood. And part of me is quite happy that he lived sort of not far from there and he's got a young family and he wanted to move back there. So when I saw he was rumoured to go into Charlton, I was like, that is not going further north, is it? So I'm not sad because I quite like Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. I like what their project is. But that would be hard to replace. Wes Houlihan signed another year. He's such a great player. He is a year older. It is a slightly harder league. I have absolutely no idea what will happen to us.
What would you bite my hand off for right now if I was to offer you above the drop?
No. I'm only biting your hand off for playoffs. I'm giving you my left arm for automatic, and I'm not doing anything else below that. Let's do League Two. I also think Jonathan said Bolton, who I watched, you know, absolutely demolish us and play some really good football. I think it'd be interesting to see how they go. Ben, you're looking sort of sad and confused.
I was just going to say, should we mention Sheffield Wednesday?
Yes, please.
I mean, I got slated for suggesting they could be relegation candidates. And I don't think they will go down. I think they could go down because they are one misstep, one sort of misdemeanour away from disaster, in the sense that if they don't play their players on time before January, then they've accepted a 6-point deduction from the EFL. So, and given their form of late, it doesn't look too reassuring in terms of Chancery and the ownership there. I mean, Darren Moore, good manager. I just think off-field, it's not hugely stable. And I think for a lot of clubs, I know we mentioned Derby earlier and ditto, who we'll come on to in a minute, Bristol Rovers in League Two with Joey Barton, the legal cases there. I think that instability can really undermine teams. So it'll be interesting what happens to Wednesday.
Jonathan, League Two, tell us everything that's going to happen.
Everything that's going to happen?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Well, who do you fancy?
Can I just go back to League One for a minute?
Yeah, sure, do what you like.
I think Burton are going to be a side to potentially watch. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank did wonders there last season. At one point, they won 6 games in a row. And I think their recruitment's been quite interesting as well. They've got a couple of players who could do quite well. Deji Oshilaja, Cameron Borthwick-Jackson, people like that. So I think Burton, not saying they're going to go up, but I think they will have kind of a solid season, and I think they can continue their progression. Looking at League Two, well... There's a couple of teams who maybe not many are talking about that I quite like the look of. Stevenage being one. I think their defensive record was really solid last season, and I think they've added one or two names that could do well this season. So, I don't know about League Two, to be honest. What do you think, Ben?
Very well, beautifully passed along there. That was marvellous.
I'm passing that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Bradford, serial underachievers, really, with Derek Adams, who got Morecambe promoted kind of against all odds last season. Fancy them to do well, be strong. Exeter have another kind of band of young players from their academy, and I think, you know, what they do is hugely impressive, given their resource. Joel Randall's actually just left for Peterborough for a 7-figure fee, so another one kind of off the rank there, as it were. And they've got a 16-year-old striker in Sonny Cox, who's somebody to watch, went on trial to Manchester United in April, I believe, and a couple of other Premier League clubs are after him. But he's actually signed a professional contract with Exeter. He scored 4 goals for United in a trial game. Clearly is pretty handy and will be involved with the first team.
Kevin Ellison, 42, playoff hero at Newport, signed a 1-year extension, and they unveiled him with sort of Voldemort, just picture of Voldemort saying the Dark Lord, the Dark Lord returns, and a picture of sort of Kevin Ellison and who was Voldemort? Was that Ralph Fiennes? Sort of mashed together, saying New Deal, 2022 in a big Voldemortish cloak. Serious note, Swindon. Can you explain what's happening there in briefly, Ben?
Yeah, so basically, a few weeks ago, it was all kind of end of the world for Swindon, or it felt that way. Now they've been taken over. They've got a new owner, Clem Morfuni, who was a minority shareholder, and they've got kind of a new everything. New CEO, new manager, new director of football, a few new faces in the building as well. The CEO actually used to be the deputy chair of the Supporters Trust, so there's a lot of feel-good factor in terms of that appointment. Fans are on side probably for the first time in a long time. Lee Power is no longer in terms of his connection with Swindon. And I mean, I think it's a struggle because they're playing catch up from the off. But, you know, they're here, and not so long ago there was real concern about where they would be going and, you know, whether they would survive, to be honest, with the financial situation. So they're on what seems like a good footing again. And yeah, the short term hope is just that they stay up really this season, I think.
Okay, that'll do for part two. Part three, the stealth signing of Danny Ings. A very interesting menu ahead of a Manchester United pre-season game. Or hopefully after. I don't know. It was very heavy. It's heavy food. We'll get into that in a sec. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Just a note to say, police have arrested 11 people as they continue a hate crimes investigation into social media messages sent after the final of Euro 2020. The UK Football Policing Unit received 600 reports of racist comments sent to England's black players after the defeat, judged 207 to be criminal. Of these, 123 were posted by people overseas, 34 came from the UK. Police said people who think they can hide behind social media accounts need to think again. Obviously, a wave of inevitable and depressing social media abuse was aimed at those players that missed penalties for England in the final last month. We'll keep you posted on that. And if there are any changes, any people are charged. Danny Ings, Barry, this came out of nowhere last night, didn't it? And maybe you don't even know yet. I don't know. But
I am aware he has signed for Aston Villa.
Yeah, he signed for Villa, a 3-year deal worth £25 million. Scored 46 goals in 100 games for Southampton after joining from Liverpool in 2018. So, like, played a lot of games. Not, you know, this image of him being sort of very injury prone is probably slightly unfair. He's a brilliant player, and I think Aston Villa has done incredibly good business with the Grealish money.
Yeah, like you say, it has come as a bit of a bolt from the blue. I wonder what Southampton. Sorry, I'm slightly surprised Southampton sold him. I think he's a terrific player. You would have injury concerns about him despite the number of games you say he has played. But it does seem a great signing for Villa. I don't think anyone saw it coming. And I would be curious to know how Southampton plan to replace him, unless they've replaced him in advance and I missed it.
I don't think so. I think it's an excellent signing. Harry Kane... news apparently in Florida, it's not a good place to be currently with COVID, and it's certainly not the Tottenham Hotspur training grounds. Nuno Espirito Santo says he's yet to speak to Harry Kane. He wasn't there for the 2-2 draw with Chelsea last night. He's not going to play in the opening game, Tottenham v Manchester City, it appears, for either team. I really expect to speak to Harry. I haven't had the chance yet. We should discuss it internally, try to avoid any public argument or discussion about it. As producer Joel writes, perhaps a little bit late for that, Nuno, but you know, you're saying the right things. Lukaku seems to be happening. They had an £85 million bid rejected this week. Inter were confident of keeping hold of him. But it looks like Lukaku's had second thoughts. I know we talked about this yesterday from a sort of Inter perspective, but Jonathan, I mean, it would just be an absolutely phenomenal signing for Chelsea. That's interesting how much, you know, they invested so much last year as well, Chelsea, and you add Lukaku to that forward line, it's sort of frighteningly good.
Yeah, it's pretty curious to see where this money's suddenly coming from. You've got £100 million. I think the British transfer record could be broken three times in a week if Grealish, Kane and Lukaku go through, I think I was reading. I mean, Lukaku's a brilliant player, one of the top forwards in the world. It shows you the premium for top strikers. I think really that my sort of takeaway from that potential move is the Premier League is basically already the European Super League. And really, if you look at kind of Juventus, Barca and Real Madrid still kind of putting out statements about the Super League still being alive, I think from their point of view, I mean, if you look over to Spain, you've got the league taking out a loan from, I think, a hedge fund in billions investing into the league to kind of basically bail them out to be able to re-sign Messi. So it really shows you the difference between the Premier League and you know, leagues like Spain at the moment. They're almost pulling away. You said something about too late there. I just wanted to go back to that Southampton, Danny Ings transfer. I find it quite funny that Southampton, I think, tweeted saying we've accepted a bid for Danny Ings after Aston Villa had already announced the signing, which on Twitter, which was quite funny, I thought, there. But yeah, Lukaku's a brilliant player. The one thing I found quite strange about that is that saying that they'd asked him to ask to leave. And I think from you know, Serie A's point of view and Inter's point of view, Lukaku's kind of like a hero at Inter at the moment, having just won the title. So I did find that a bit strange. I don't know if he really wants to leave. I don't know if he's maybe being pressured because of the financial situation at Inter. You know, that and obviously it's quite well documented their issues. Antonio Conte had to almost leave because he wasn't going to get the transfers he wanted. So there's a strange backstory there, I think. But if Lukaku comes to Chelsea, then you know I'd look at them as maybe alongside Man City as favourites for the title.
Can I ask what is probably a stupid question, which is what difference does it make if a player puts in a transfer request? I mean, presumably Harry Kane, I mean, he's not turned up. I mean, that seems like a transfer request to me. Or does it like contractually change things if you officially put one in?
Contractually, if you ask to leave a club, then you waive your right to a loyalty bonus. So that's what I found interesting about the Lukaku thing, because he clearly doesn't really want to leave. I think he said a few times publicly that he's happy to stay at Inter. He loves the club. Obviously, they're going to have fans back, which they didn't have before. So, you know, the chance to play in front of fans where he's a hero. So, yeah, when you formally request a transfer, you're essentially waiving the rights to a loyalty bonus, which can be quite a lot of money, because the loyalty bonus is, you know, you're basically per year, you get X amount of money perhaps for staying at the club, staying loyal to your contract. So Kane will be keeping quiet. Maybe he might have a reason behind the scenes. But he hasn't formally, I don't think, requested a transfer yet. So technically speaking, he might still be due his loyalty bonus, although some might find that a little bit hard to believe.
You can't have a loyalty bonus to spend at Disney World, can you? I mean,
but I think the fact that he's not turned up, that you know, if reports are to be believed, then that obviously it's a bit of a waiver there. But if you look at, for example, Mateus Pereira at West Brom, you know, the comments he put out about wanting to leave now, he was saying, I think in that Instagram post, he mentioned that, you know, I don't mind about that loyalty bonus, essentially, you know, I've got to say my piece and I've got to take the money on offer at another club somewhere.
One would presume that a blatant, very public and ostentatious display of disloyalty might cost you your loyalty bonus, but, you know, I'm no legal expert.
I haven't read the contract. Loyalty bonus, if you are disloyal, you cannot keep your loyalty bonus. Really sad news for Wesley Fofana. Suffered a broken leg during their pre-season friendly against Villarreal. It was a pretty nasty challenge by Ferrino. It's a bad day today. I'm in a tremendous club with a wonderful medical team, he posted. I'll give you news as soon as I have a final diagnosis. We already know I have a fibula fracture. I do sort of sometimes think, you know, that it was a bad challenge, but I sometimes sort of feel the rage about challenges saying this is a pre-season friendly. You know, bad challenges happen and people don't get injured and no one gets really angry with people. I don't know if that's a ridiculous thing to think. It was a bad thing. Do I sound like an idiot?
Well, no, I haven't seen the challenge, but if it was late, if it was excessively violent, there's no need for that in a
I completely agree, but it was a challenge which was...
And he will be a huge loss to Leicester because he was brilliant last
season. It was a late challenge that's kind of scissored him, but it, you know, I don't think... How do I know? I don't think he was saying, I want to break this guy's leg, but it wasn't a good challenge. On to slightly less important things. Adam says, the age... which it becomes unacceptable to wear a replica shirt with a player's name on the back. He suggests surely it's when you're older than the player in question. So I could still wear a Formiga shirt. I think that's, and maybe a Kevin Ellison shirt. That's probably just about it. A correction. Daniel said the Ojoa on the Inter Miami side is Victor Ojoa. I just presumed it was Leonardo Ojoa, but it isn't. So thank you for that. Russell says, not a question about the EFL. I did enjoy the pod about football pitches. If you remember, Barry, we laughed about the fact that in the holidays we couldn't find enough good old podcasts, so we put one out about turf. A lot of people said it was very interesting. He says, mind you, I listened to it while sitting in my garden, drinking beer while watching my very own grass grow. Perhaps I'm weird, he says.
I don't have a lawn or a garden, but people who do seem curiously obsessed with their lawns. And apparently a lot of maintenance goes into having a nice lawn. So maybe that's the thing. I'm going to listen to it now anyway. My curiosity has been piqued.
Manchester United Zone tweeted out the United players' meals tonight at their team meal, which we have thoroughly enjoyed. There's not a whole lot on offer, but I sort of picked out Fred. I really enjoyed Fred. Starter, tempura chicken. Main, rib of beef, no dessert, but a side of mac and cheese. Oh, you need a sleep. That can't be 2 hours before kickoff. The guy will be shattered. Tom Heaton went for chicken tempura starter, barbecue short rib with thick cut chips, a caramel and Biscoff tartlet for dessert. The goalkeepers, you know, if they're not going to start, they're having to eat whatever they like. Lee Grant has brackets GK next to his name because nobody knows that he's a goalkeeper.
But David De Gea doesn't.
No, the people know De Gea's a keeper. Lee Grant, they're not sure about. Were there any that you liked, Barry, in this?
There's quite a few players who didn't opt for a starter. And then some who did. There was tempura chicken was a popular choice. Goat's cheese, Bruno Fernandes went for. I know Harry Maguire went for ham hock, which is lovely. If you've never had ham hock, I'd highly recommend it. And then quite a few of them went for not bread, but normal bread. So I don't know if there was various options, like, you know, sourdough or pita.
But no one else bread, had any other type of bread, did they? As far as I can say.
And I'm very disappointed with Mason Greenwood, who didn't have a starter. Went for a fillet steak, well done. Anyone who eats steak well done, just there. I have no time for them. That's just no way to eat steak. He didn't have a pudding, and he had halloumi fries as a side dish. But yeah, the selection of puddings, I'm surprised that elite athletes are getting stuck into creme brulee, sticky toffee pudding, and caramel and Biscoff tartlets.
Jesse Lingard, very specific about his cheeseburger. Brackets, only cheese, nothing else on it. You were worried about, Ben, the sort of double chicken orders.
Yeah, and I just feel like that's no way to go, is it? But that's why I quite like Tuan Zabi, because he's got no starter, no dessert. I don't think any sides from that.
No, he's got sweet potato fries.
Oh, has he gone? Okay, sorry. I should have known better. But I quite like that because when I go out and if I'm hungry, I don't want to be waiting around for people to have, you know, fanning around with little starters. So I just quite like his route one, straight in, main, job done.
Donny van der Beek did chicken tempura and chicken supreme, followed by a cheesecake. Also doubling up on the chicken, Phil Jones, who went chicken tempura, chicken supreme with sweet potato fries and a sticky toffee pudding. The only, as producer Joel, the only vegetable mentioned anywhere is Anthony Martial's side of spinach in an entire an entire elite football squad. So that is great, isn't it? Anyway, that'll do for today's podcast. Ben, thank you. So, hang on. No, it isn't. How ridiculous. We've been waiting all this moment for Ben Fisher to pick up. I believe the question was, if you had to choose one EFL car park to have one of your grand adventures, which would it be?
First, yeah, thanks for the question. I fit...
It's from Joel.
Thanks, Joel. Not producer Joel.
I hope not.
That would be an own goal. I feel like I will go... I was going to say Yeovil, you know, but that's a non-league. So that's not allowed.
Okay, but why Yeovil?
Just quite quaint, quite ordinary. And I feel like you can express yourself there. Lots of room, roomy. I don't really know what's going on here for the adventure, to be fair. So I think Yeovil would allow lots of opportunities.
I don't know what that means, but I'm pleased with the response. All the opportunities of the Yeovil car park. If anyone has ever done anything in the Yeovil Town's car park, footballweekly@theguardian.com.
I hope it doesn't turn out to be like a dogging spot.
There's a little grass verge. I mean, you know, it's quite...
Anything could happen. You're right. Anyway, thanks, Ben. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Thanks, Baz.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.